You're listening to a Dwell Community Church production. If you'd like to check out more resources, visit dwellcc.org.
So I'm Calissa, this is Liz. We'll give a little bit more information on our kind of burden for this topic in a little bit. But what we're going to do is we're going to cover kind of introductory what is included in this topic of stress and suffering, and then looking at the biblical perspective of this. And so this is just important from the beginning. To be transparent, we're coming from the perspective that the Bible is the foundation of truth that gives us a place to stand in the middle of suffering and as we go through life. And then we want to talk about unhelpful things that we do and helpful things, helpful ways that we can teach our kids to navigate stress and suffering. So to start off, some things about our experience, types of hardship, expectations we have, and our goal here, we want to break these down. So first, Liz is going to talk about her experience.
All right, this is my family. Those are my two kids when they were little. And then my two kids are both grown and got married. So the reason I have a huge burden about this topic is because before I ever had children, I had a relationship with God and I was pursuing that. And I experienced a lot of hardship, but I saw that God used that in my life in a good way. And sometimes I would look back on some of the worst things that happened to me and see that they were actually some of the best things that happened to me, which sounds crazy, but that we'll talk more about the biblical view in a minute. But then I had kids and I was like, I don't want them to experience anything hard. And it was shocking to me because I didn't expect to think this way, but I realized that what I believed for myself, I didn't believe for my kids. And over the years, God taught me that actually what's good for me is also good for them, even though it was the hardest, one of the hardest things about parenting. So I have a real burden for it because I feel like we need to learn to think correctly about suffering when it comes to our kids, because it actually can be something that God uses in their lives.
Cool. This is my family. I have two kids. I'm just in the middle of the storm, same as everyone else here. I don't know if my kids will grow up to suffer victoriously, to handle stress well. They are 1 and 3. That's Cora and Zane. So my heart for this topic comes from two places. One, professionally, this was my what I studied was clinical counseling, specifically with children. And so I got to do a bunch of work on helping children who are navigating really complex, difficult situations. So that's part of where I have a burden for this topic. The other place is that when I was little, I went through some things that are things that I want my kids to not experience. Or at least initially, that's my first thought. So when I was really little, when I was 5, my family moved to a different country. So this big disruption happened. I'm like 5. All of a sudden, I'm pulled away from people that I was close to, from my home. And then I was exposed to pretty significant levels of poverty and seeing that from a really young age. And then even like my best childhood friend, she had this really significant illness that eventually led to her death. And so as a child, I'm walking alongside these different experiences. And now as an adult, I look back on that and I'm like, those were the best things that happened to me. Those are the things that God used to draw me to himself. But then just like Liz was saying, as a mom now, I'm in this other world and I'm like, I don't want my kids to experience difficulty. Like, what should I shield them from? What kinds of exposure are like good exposure to hardship? And then when is it scary and things that they shouldn't know, or I don't want them to see the evil of the world. So my burden is just like, I'm in the middle of this tension that I know that suffering produced intimacy with God in my own life. And I know as a mom, I don't want my kids to go through difficulty. So I'm just in the middle of it. That's where I'm coming from here. So what kind of hardship are we talking about? And we're just really covering everything here this morning. This is very general. This could relate to the way your child is treated, things that they interact with at school, at the playground. It could be really small things, bullying, hurt feelings, but then it could be obviously bullying can be very significant. My point is we're covering this very broad picture. And there are very acute, difficult types of suffering that we're just really scratching the surface of this morning. There's so much more to be said for really difficult life circumstances. But what's revealed about our suffering, or what's revealed about really our expectations in suffering, is that we have this idea that we can control all the circumstances around my child. If I do everything right, then my child will be blank, 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 will be safe, will be a healthy adult or something. And then suffering comes crashing into your life and you realize all of a sudden, I'm not in control in the way that I thought I was. And it reveals or exposes our false hopes. What was I putting my hope in? What was I placing my confidence in? And so it's really important for us to figure this out now when we have little kids, because they're going to experience suffering. And either they'll know how to handle that well because we've prepared them for it, or they'll be stuck. And we have to really weigh out what do we want our child to be like when they encounter difficulty. We really like this quote, and you guys, we don't know where it's from. It's by Jim Taylor, and Liz and I were both trying to figure it out, and we can't find the citation. But Jim Taylor says this: all children face adversity in their journey to adulthood. Learning to deal with difficulty is a need for healthy growth, but they need to be taught a healthy perspective. If you don't have those experiences early in life to figure out how to deal with them, then you're going to experience them as an adult and not know how to deal with them. So we're trying to think the long term here. How can we set our kids up to be resilient in the middle of suffering? So this morning, we want to hone in on three things. To navigate hardship, we want our children to trust in God, have relationships with others, and then have skills. We want to actually give them skills they can practice when they're little. So this tree, I'm not a huge tree person. Okay, full disclosure. Love trees, but there's so much I don't know. This is General Sherman. This is the largest giant sequoia in the world. It's as tall as the Statue of Liberty. It's not the tallest tree, but it's the largest in mass and volume. And what's significant about this tree is that its bark is really thick, and its roots, they don't grow down deep into the soil. They actually are pretty shallow, but they grow really wide, and they intertwine with the roots of other trees. And this is the kind of picture we want to use throughout this morning to help us think about what we want our child to be like. So we're going to think about it this way. We're going to think in the same way that a tree grows up, we're trying to teach our children to focus on the vertical perspective. Who is God in suffering? In the same way that this tree has these interconnected roots that really give them a foundation for like withstanding storms, we want our children to be interconnected with other people. And in the same way that it has this really thick bark, these are the skills that little by little, we're teaching them really small things so that they can look back on themselves and feel like, wow, I have a ton of skills to help me be sturdy in the middle of difficulty. And even giant sequoias, actually, they benefit from fire disturbances in their environment because of how it affects the way that seeds fall and the nutrients in their soil. And so there are even things about that, that they need actual difficulty in their environment to be healthier. And so this is the kind of thinking we're having about our children this morning. So first, Liz is going to go through the biblical view of this.
Okay, I'm going to talk about what God says about suffering. And this is really important because we as parents need to have the correct view, and we need to be able to respond well to suffering. And then we need to be able to help our kids understand and respond well to suffering. And really, honestly, we can't do that without really understanding what God says about it, because it gives us so much insight that doesn't come naturally to us. So first thing that we want to talk about is that suffering is promised. Just like Calissa just had all those things about ways that our kids are going to suffer in ways that we have suffered, the Bible says that we are going to experience hardship. Jesus says in John 16, I have said these things to you that in me you may have peace. In the world you will have troubles. It's just a fact that as much as we want to control and keep hard things from happening to our kids, we really can't. They are going to experience hardship. And it's really helpful to have them go through difficulty when they're in our home so that we're able to help them think through and navigate instead of protecting them, and then sending them out when they turn 18 to experience the whole world with all its hardship. Another good verse is 1 Peter 4. It says, "Therefore, since Christ has suffered in the flesh, arm yourselves also with the same purpose. Beloved, do not be surprised at the fiery ordeal among you, as though some strange thing were happening to you, but to the degree that you share the sufferings of Christ, keep on rejoicing, so that at the revelation of his glory, you may also rejoice and be overjoyed." There's tons of stuff in here, but what we know is that Christ suffered on this earth, and Peter's saying we should arm ourselves and be prepared to also suffer and not be surprised when things happen. And we need to teach our kids not to be surprised when hard things happen to them. There's a nice nugget in here too, that by going through suffering, we share in identifying with Christ and the suffering that he went through. And that's just an extra little byproduct that we can help our kids know that they're not alone, that he also has gone through these things and they can identify with him as well. Just a note though, God doesn't delight in suffering. He's not happy about the fact that we live in a world where there is evil and suffering. If you study Christ's character in the New Testament, you see that he is sad about the suffering that people go through. So it's not that, but it is what he's saying is we do need to be prepared because this is the world that we live in. The second thing that's really important from a biblical perspective is that God uses suffering for growth. And he uses suffering for growth in our relationship with him, and he uses suffering for growth in our characters. And these are two great reasons to think rightly about suffering. So the first thing, Psalm 94 says, "But the Lord has been my stronghold and my rock, and my God, the rock of my refuge." So when you think about going through suffering, and one of the great things that can happen is our kids can learn to lean into their relationship with Christ. Christ is actually our stronghold and our rock. And do we believe that? Are we able to think, okay, when my kid's going through this hardship, I want to point him or her to the idea that they can use this to draw close to God, and they can use this, as Calissa said, to develop more intimacy with God. And there's nothing as strong as the stability that God can give us through these things. He's the God who created the universe. He knows us. He knows our children. And so this idea that this can be a way to develop our relationship with him is really important. Another great verse that I like is 2 Corinthians 1. It says, "For we do not want you to be unaware, brethren, of our affliction which came to us in Asia, that we were burdened excessively beyond our strength, so that we despaired even of life. Indeed, we had the sentence of death within ourselves, so that we would not trust in ourselves, but in God who raises the dead." Here, Paul is saying, I went through this suffering that was way beyond my strength. And what was the outcome? That he realized that he needed to depend on God. That's what we want for our kids, to be able to depend on God rather than themselves when they go through this. God is a God of resources and power, way more than we have as parents. And so when you see this idea that suffering can bring about a deeper relationship with God, that's something that we want to point our kids to. And then the other way he uses it for growth is in our character. And Romans 5 says, "Not only so, but we also glory in our sufferings, because we know that suffering produces perseverance, perseverance character, and character hope." Now, I think if we went around the room and we said, like, what's one of the most important things you want for your kids? We would probably all say character. But the question is, are we willing to allow them to go through the hard things in order to develop. It's really important for us to think about this because we need to ask ourselves, will we miss what God's doing because we're so focused on ourselves or our kid or on alleviating the pain? Will we miss that God's actually at work and he can do amazing things through difficult circumstances? The third thing is kind of going to your point that suffering directs us toward heaven. So 2 Corinthians 4 says, we do not lose heart, though outwardly we're wasting away, yet inwardly we're being renewed day by day. For our light and momentary troubles are achieving for us an eternal glory that far outweighs them all. So we fix our eyes not on what is seen, but on what is unseen, since what is seen is temporary, but what is unseen is eternal. So one of the things about having a relationship with Christ is that he teaches us that this world is temporary and that actually someday God's going to create a new heaven, a new earth, and we're going to live with him. Those who have a relationship with him, we're going to live with him for eternity in an environment that has no more suffering and no more pain. And the way to do that is to simply accept his free gift of salvation by asking him to have his death apply on our behalf. But what a great promise we have that this life is not all it is, and that we can look forward to a future where we can live forever in an environment where we won't be having to talk about this. How do we help each other deal with suffering? And if we can help our kids get this perspective, it can really change the way they interact with their trials. So if you think about, we all know how this works, because if you're leaving on vacation Saturday and you're having a terrible week, you're like, oh, I can do it. I can do all these things because I know when Saturday comes, I'm at the beach. And so we understand this thing, and this is just on a much more global scale, that the hardship that we face in this life takes on a different perspective when we understand there's another life. So viewing life through this longer lens creates a stability and strength and endurance. It can help teach our kids that circumstances do not dictate their happiness. And it develops meaning and purpose and hope beyond these immediate circumstances. And these things are the kinds of things that help our kids as adults to really navigate their life successfully. Oswald Sanders has this quote in Spiritual Clinic. He says, God's love is long-sighted. To him, the spiritual welfare and growth of his children is of far greater importance than their physical comfort. Hence the ministry of suffering. He does not always spare present pain if it will produce eternal profit. And this sounds a little difficult, but God takes the long view, and he knows the impact that character growth, the impact that suffering can have on character growth and on a relationship with him. And he values that above alleviating all pain. And so he doesn't like us to suffer, but he understands that it brings about things that actually are helpful to us in our relationship with him. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about some unhelpful responses to suffering. Here's a great image. Like Calissa just said, the tree needs to have some stress to really, that they benefit from that. But here we are with our kids. We're like, no stress, please. Just live in a bubble. That's what we try to do. So a couple unhelpful responses. One is focused solely on relief of circumstances. So instead of thinking through God's work with your kids. So this is the idea that we kind of race in and just fix things or defend or make things right so that our kid doesn't have to experience hardship. And man, I remember this pull so well when my kids were little. I just wanted to stop the crying and stop the sadness. And so this is, now of course, it's important to know that there are some things that we do need to protect our kids from. There are some things that we do need to defend. The other unhelpful response I want to talk about is direct your children toward what is outside their control instead of highlighting where they have choice opportunity for responding to growth. So an example would be like they get hurt or they're in a conflict or something like that. And then instead of getting them to think about their choices or what they could do, we speak trash about their friend or their family, or we blame shift, or we make excuses for them instead of helping them to learn how what they're able to take responsibility for and how they're able to make choices, which is one of the greatest ways to keep them from being like having like a victim mentality. Because if we can empower them to know that they can withstand and make choices, then that's going to really change their lives. I think it's helpful to think about what underlies these unhelpful responses because it helps us to know what's going on in our thinking, and I think there's a few things. One is a horizontal perspective. What Calissa talked about, the vertical, is so important. What is God's role here? What is he doing? Rather than just thinking this is all about people. Focusing, we often focus on the short term, which we've kind of talked about a little bit, instead of the long-term gain. And we trust, really what I think a lot of this boils down to is we trust our own influence, power, and control more than we trust God's. And God, actually the safest place for our kids to be is in his will and his hands more than in ours even. It's hard to believe. So I like this little, this is the Grinch. So keeping in the tree mode, here he is, he's gonna go fix the, this is the other thing we do. So we keep him in a bubble or we fix the situation. And so those are the ways that we can have unhelpful responses. Now Calissa's gonna do the great, the good part of helpful things.
Okay. So to just kind of wrap up, we wanna talk about what can we try to do. And there are so many things that we are not going to cover in this. It's hard to come in here and say, like, here are helpful strategies, and there are a million that we're not talking about. So we're just covering a few. Hopefully you can take one to your house and feel like you're doing this to grow their bark. Remember, this is what we're working on. Like, how can I direct their attention upward? How can I connect them with their friends? How can I give them skills to build their resilience? So thinking about how can I help my kid develop trust in God? I think the first place to start is we have to think about our own thinking and learn to pause in the middle of the chaos and the wanting to jump in. We're learning to pause and we want to learn to ask ourselves questions like, what is God doing here right now? What could he be doing? We're almost daydreaming with God. Like, what are you almost, okay, I'm stepping outside of this circumstance. I'm going to chat with him for a second before I step back into the chaos of my circumstance. And we're asking things like, what could this produce in the character of my child? Like, what, God, are you doing right now? What are you hoping to accomplish here? Because I don't want to intervene too quickly and interrupt that. And then we can also think about, how does this increase my longing for heaven, this difficult circumstance? And then how could it increase my child's longing for heaven? Because we don't really want them to think that this life on earth is heaven. We don't want them to have that assumption or belief about the world. We want them to grow up knowing this is not heaven. This is brokenness. And in order to experience that, they're going to have to run into that. And so then we can turn our conversations to the place that God is building for them, where we will be together, where you can be with God. And so taking difficulty in the present to direct their attention to where they can go to be with God in the future. Of course, there are so many other like fun, creative things. Somebody that is in a playgroup that I'm in made this photo album for her son that has just pictures of family, like family members or them doing fun things together. And on every page, there's a memory verse that has to do with the picture. There's one that's like, they're throwing their kid up and it's some verse about like, and God will lift you up, blah, blah, blah. And so she's teaching this little three-year-old from a really young age, here are verses I'm teaching you. We're going to turn our attention to the things of God in the midst of our day-to-day life. And I'm sure there are a ton of other things like that that you guys are doing, but we want to start by thinking about our own thinking even before we're going into all these fun strategies for our child. What about relationships? How can we build out our kids' relationships? So we want to think about our own relating with them. Am I spending regular time with them? And I'm not just physically present there, and then mentally I'm doing 14 other things, because we can do that. It's incredible. You can be physically with your kid and then worried about all these other things or multitasking in different ways instead of being actually present with our kid. Am I telling them, I cannot wait for our time together this week? I'm looking forward to our day because we're going to do this thing and I can't wait to be with you. And by narrating that, we're telling them relationships are important. Being present with people is important. And then we're also emphasizing relationships outside of our family, like relationships with friends. And I'm showing my child, I love you and I love my friends. And I want you to see that I am actually also prioritizing my friendships because I want you to grow up to prioritize your friendships. And so in our friendships and their friendships, we are helping them work through conflict by owning their own part, not just always resolving their problems. Of course, this is nuance, like we said. We have to sometimes intervene. But if we want our kid to grow up knowing you're not just a victim to everyone else's behavior, no, you have agency, you can make a choice here, then we want to start using that kind of language with our children. This seemed like something that you caused. You did this thing. You made this decision. This is how it impacted this person. And so we're helping them figure out what can they own, how to move back and reconcile with people. And then in this, I think a foundational part of teaching your kid to be a good friend is helping them identify and meet the needs of other people. And so like in my house right now, this looks like, wow, your sister is crying. Okay, we're just acknowledging the reality. Your sister is crying. She feels sad, identifying the emotion. I wonder what we could do to help someone who is sad. And I'm just posing the question out loud. I wonder what we could do. And so we're starting in our language to introduce to our children, this is an opportunity. I'm observing something, and then this is an opportunity that I could choose to do something to help someone who's in this situation. And then, of course, as they grow up, we're doing this in so many other ways. We can be super creative. And so the last little part here, I wanted to talk about some really specific skills. And these are sort of into the weeds here, because we want to give the big picture foundation of suffering, and we also want people to leave here and be like, I can have this practical thing I can do at my house. So it's getting specific. Take what you want from it. The first, and this is clinical and also just biblical foundational principle, teaching gratitude in your household. In my work setting, then when I worked with kids, the way that we did this is I had this tree in my office. It was just made out of construction paper, a tree. And every kid that came through my door, every time we had a session, so this was just part of their routine of our session, they would write something they're grateful for on a little leaf that was fall colored. And then throughout the year, the whole thing was like covered. My walls covered in these little tiny construction paper leaves full of people's gratitude. And I was working with like kindergarten through second graders, so it was always like chocolate, grandma, my ferret. Like those were the things on my wall. And they knew that this was part of our routine, and then they loved looking at the other kids' things that they were thankful for. It was like a contagious thing. And so if we're going to try to teach our kids, your circumstances don't determine your happiness. You can choose your attitude. We really have to expand this outside of the month of November. Because I don't know about you guys, but I feel like we get these November kicks. Like, what are we going to, the thankful turkey or something, you know? And so we teach our kids to be thankful in the month of November, and then it kind of falls to the side the rest of the year. This is something we want to be intentional about. How am I intentionally building gratitude into my child's life daily? And so maybe this looks like conversations. Look, we like talking about this at the grocery store. And so we're just going through our day. We're at Aldi. Wow, I'm so glad we get to buy food today. This is actually really important that we get to buy food, and we're going to take it to our house, and we're going to put it in our fridge, and then we get to eat it. This is something we can thank God for. And so in the way that we speak, am I encouraging my child towards gratitude, or am I directing, with my speech, am I directing their attention towards what they don't have, what I wish I had, what I don't have time for? And so we have to be thoughtful about how we speak around our kids in order to build this gratitude as a skill, viewing it as a skill and not just something that they'll pick up on. Growth mindset. So this is something that we've talked about, I think, in these meetings before. Because it's in every social-emotional learning curriculum, education courses, I mean, counseling, all of those things are emphasizing this idea that you can grow. A person is not static in their ability. They can learn and grow. And effort is what we want to praise in our children. And so I'm pretty sure it's Nurture Shock. Nurture Shock was a book that we were talking about years ago, I think. Has a really good chapter on this, on language you can use in your home to make sure that you're focusing on praising effort instead of just, you know, you're so smart or these kind of fixed things. And so when we're, a lot of these are related to how you speak. If you could listen to yourself speak to your child, what would they be picking up on? What would someone else, if someone else was listening to your parenting, what would they hear you emphasize or hear you prioritize with your children? You can grow and you can work through difficulty. These are things that we're trying to keep emphasizing to them as they're trying to build out this bark for being resilient. And then finally, in DBT, which is dialectical behavioral therapy, which is kind of a side piece of cognitive behavioral therapy, which focuses specifically on helping people navigate distressing situations, there are two things I want to share with you guys that are, again, where the biblical worldview meets the secular world. These are where we agree. One is the idea of radical acceptance. So in this focus of therapy, you're telling people in the clinical setting, we're learning to accept things as they are, not just trying to change, not just trying to figure out like why this is happening. And I think this is true in our relationship with God. We're not necessarily going to get answers about why is suffering happening in my kid's life. But I can direct my attention to what I'm going to do, how we're going to respond. And so again, in our language, in our household, maybe we're using things like our kid is struggling with something. My kids, it's like a whole temper tantrum on the floor falling over because you have egg on your finger, like whatever, the small things. And instead of, I really related with what Marielle was saying earlier about, like sometimes we're just like, I just am going to do something to make myself not have to live through this drama that you're in. But some of what we can do that instead of just answering and like, okay, I'm going to jump in and clean you up or whatever, we can just learn to state what's happening in our language. I see you're facing a challenge. It seems like you're going to have to figure out what you want to do about this. And then I'm just going to walk away. And so I'm acknowledging you have a big feeling. And then I'm letting them know, I think you can figure this out. And I'm giving them space to figure it out before I come in and intervene. And then finally, a specific distress tolerance skill, which is helping a child, similar to emotion regulation, where you're giving them tools to manage their emotion. This is related to not relieving the situation, but giving them tools to be able to manage the big feelings. There's a really specific tool I want you to have. It's called TIP, T-I-P-P. So TIP is just an acronym to remind you of what you could have your kid do in the middle of a big stressful situation. So you're changing their body temperature, that's T. And this might look like a million things, like go outside, it's 40 degrees out. We did, in the school that I worked at, we would send our kids, like, go find the coldest water fountain in the building. That was our thing. And it kind of combined intense exercise and temperature because they're doing these large, gross motor movement. I'm walking across the whole school, and I'm deciding which one of these is the coldest. But you're trying to regulate them physiologically. I'm cooling them off. So thinking in a chaotic situation of your house, how can I help my kid truly just find something cold to calm down. Hold the ice pack. Can you come find my waffles in the freezer? Whatever it is. Eat this frozen waffle right now. Things that are cooling them off. Intense exercise, which is the I of tip. It doesn't have to be running or doing push-ups. My kids would never do that. But things like I want you to go outside and touch 4 trees and then come right back. Or we have a little trampoline in our backyard. You can go give me 10 jumps on the trampoline and then we can talk about this when you come back in. Giving them ways to like physically work this out before we try to even reason with someone who's in a really elevated state. Paced breathing. These are the breathing exercises like box breathing, or at our house we like bee breathing. You breathe in and then you bzzz on your way out like a bee. Or we do candle breathing. Whatever your kid likes, you can make it into a breathing activity. And my kid really likes birthday cakes. And so we just are like, today you're turning 8, blah, every single candle. And so over and over again, they're breathing in and breathing out and breathing in and breathing out, practicing breathing to calm themselves down to regulate. And then paired muscle relaxation is when they're tensing and releasing different muscle groups. And when they're really little, you can do this externally. You can do squeeze like big bear hugs. And so you're helping them externally. I'm giving them pressure and then I'm helping release so that they are learning, okay, I can physiologically calm down out of this stressful situation. So again, we wanted to hit both really specific skills you could use for high stress moments all the way to the foundational like worldview of suffering that we want to have as we're helping our kids navigate difficulty. A last little thing about specific skills. These are some books that you could read with your kid about different things. Sadness, fear. A huge shout out needs to go to this Captain Snout book. This is one of my favorite books ever. It's so good. You what?
I now am buying that book. I never knew this when I had little kids, but
Liz is buying it.
I'm sold.
It's worth your time. This book covers the idea of cognitive distortions in a way for a child to understand. And so Captain Snout is an anteater. He's a superhero, as you can see. He asks questions. That's why he has a big question mark on his chest. He's an anteater, and he comes in and helps these kids solve their problem by asking questions about these ants. And they're in the pictures. They're like actual little pictures of ants. And each of the ants is a different type of cognitive distortion. And he calls them automatic negative thoughts. So ANT is an acronym. And he teaches, oh, this is the all or nothing ant. The all or nothing ant says blank, 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 blank. Here are the questions that Captain Snout, the superhero, asks about this to figure out, is this thought true? Is it 100% true? Or are you 100% sure that it's true? And so you're using a children's book to teach your kid, you don't have to believe everything you think. So we could go on about so many other resources, but these are just a couple for you as you're trying to figure out, what can I include in my kid's day to build out their skills? These are some of them. So Liz is just going to wrap up for us, then we'll be done.
I love it's so cool. You know, now I can look back for a long time, and it's so cool to hear like the very specific types of things that we can do from the time they're little, and then those things can just grow as your kids grow, and your relationship with them is going to grow, and you're going to be able to build a foundation for them to think about their suffering in a way that really comes from God, which is really exciting, and comes from having a good, strong relationship. And I think you guys, as parents, you're just in a unique position to be able to really help your kids in these areas. So just as a conclusion, we can prepare our kids to handle suffering in the future. We can focus on what God is doing rather than on protecting them from suffering. We can remind ourselves of the goal of character development. And we can pray for our kids to be more compassionate, more like Christ, and focused on the eternal. And I just want to reiterate what Calissa said that, I know we're really scratching the surface here, and some of you guys are, I know some people in this room who are going through some really hard suffering, and, you know, there are things that are beyond what we're talking about that kids need help with. But it is, I think it's helpful for us to get the overview and to think about what God wants to do. And I love this quote from Shepherd looks at Psalm 23. As Christians, we will sooner or later discover that it's in the valleys of our lives that we find refreshment from God himself. It is not until we've walked with him through some very deep troubles that we discover he can lead us to find our refreshment in him right there in the midst of our difficulty. We're thrilled beyond words when there comes restoration to our souls and spirits from his own gracious spirit. And that's what we want for our kids, to be able to navigate things in a way that by the time they get older, they're able to lean into that relationship with God and know that he has them in his hands, and he's able to refresh them and give them perspective and to restore them in the ways that they need restored. That's all we got.
God, thank you that it is empowering. I think, like Morgan was saying, like, thanks that you are the one that is in control of all the things with our kids, that you are bigger than circumstances and you have a vision for them that we don't even know. We can't even fully see, like, what you're developing our kids into. Things that our role is to be present with them, to, like, do the daily work of drawing them to you and to friends and trying to give them these skills. And we just ask that you would help us lean against our own fears and our own tendencies to jump in and just pause and think about what you're doing in the lives of our kids so that they grow up and actually are able to be resilient through the difficult things in this world, and pray that this world and the brokenness of it would draw them to you.
Yeah. Yeah, God, I really thank you for who you are and that you love us perfectly and completely and you love our kids. And it is priceless that you are able to transform our character, transform our kids' character, enable us to see things from your perspective. It's just the most amazing gift that you died for us so that we could have our identity in you, but not only that, but you've given us the ability to learn to be like you. Mm-hmm. And just want to pray for these guys here that, you know, whatever it is that you want to draw your attention to, you will, and that you can help. You know, being a parent is an impossible job, and I just pray that you can help each one to take the steps that you want them to take.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Amen.
Amen.